Hello, everybody. It's Sam from Financial Samurai. And in this episode, I want to talk about solving the happiness money conundrum in 5 moves or less. So if you live in America, or you live in Canada, or a developed European country, or Hong Kong, Singapore, Australia, you've got more money than the large majority of the world's population. And yet, you might not be very happy. And I think the reason why you might not be very happy is because you're spending too much time focusing on money, power, and prestige, and not enough time on everything else. So I don't think money makes up more than 40% of what makes us happy. The other stuff is just much more important, but we neglect that other stuff, which I'm going to talk about in this episode. And I think these are the things that will really make us happy. So after a tense 14-12 softball victory, I'm in this weekly law league softball league, and it's funny because I'm not a lawyer. I just decided to play because someone invited me. The six of us went to a nearby brewery for some beers, oysters, burgers, and so forth, and we were just elated because the team was really, really good, and we got some clutch hits. And I ended up sitting next to this guy, really big guy, 6'5" tall, crushes the ball 300+ feet, and he's our cleanup hitter, and let's just call him Biff. And in high school, Biff said he was a pretty popular guy. He played varsity baseball, varsity basketball, but he also admitted he was a little bit cruel to the smaller kids. Most kids were smaller than him, and then cruel to the exchange students. And I asked him, why was he so cruel? And he said, well, it was because I was immature and because I could. And he told me he wasn't proud of his actions and he wished he could apologize to them today. And I see a lot of Biffs nowadays in the real world and in the online world where, you know, they were just kind of cruel and bullies when they were in school, and they've turned out to be bullies and really, really kind of nasty people as adults. So anyway, after the financial crisis hit in 2008, Biff fell into a deep depression. The house he had bought when he was 27 years old ended up losing half its value. He was told he couldn't lose and that real estate was the surefire way to riches. Not only had he lost all his equity, but he also owed more than the house was worth in just 1 year. So Biff proceeded to gain over 100 pounds as he literally locked himself within his rapidly depreciating prison. At age 30, he was morbidly obese, broke, and girlfriendless. Life had no more meaning to him, and he definitely contemplated suicide. But good thing he didn't, because one day, out of the blue, the state of Florida threw him a lifeline by offering him a free $75,000 to pay off some of his mortgage if he promised to keep up with the regular payments. He took advantage of the taxpayers' money and fulfilled his side of the deal. And despite feeling a little bit guilty for taking the bailout money, Biff started gaining positive momentum in his life again. Over the ensuing 2 years, he lost about 70 pounds. He got a promotion at work, and finally, at the age of 32, found a girlfriend. He also very importantly stopped hating on anybody and everybody who seemed to be doing better than him because he was finally in a better place himself. The first step to him feeling happy was to make sure his finances were no longer going in reverse. They had stabilized. And once they had stabilized, Biff's happiness grew because he found someone who loved him despite all his flaws. Today, they're married and they have a daughter. And he's happy. Being rich didn't matter anymore to Biff. Making progress did. Oh, and being able to win a softball game by crushing it over the fence 300+ feet. Makes him really, really happy. And I tell you the story because I truly believe that money is not the primary driver to happiness. At most, 40% in my opinion, if you look at the post and the polls, 50% is at most, according to about 700 votes. If you look at the annual World Happiness Report, so the latest one came out recently, and Finland, Norway, and Denmark are in the top three. And the reality is that these countries are always in the top 5 to top 10. And the report highlighted 6 significant factors which contributed to happiness. GDP per capita, social support, life expectancy, freedom to make life choices, generosity, and corruption levels. And if you look at the United States, it's ranked 18. So it's kind of weird because we have by far the largest GDP in the world, you know, but being 18, there's kind of some kind of disconnect. And it's just such a conundrum that I think, and the report attributed several reasons as to why Americans are not happier. They include wealth inequality, obesity, right, like my friend Biff, substance abuse, and depression. And all of these things seem to kind of go hand in hand together. The United States, on a GDP per capita basis, ranks only about 19. So that's pretty much in line with the happiness ranking. However, GDP per capita alone doesn't neatly explain why more of the wealthiest countries aren't in the top 10. For example, Singapore has a GDP per capita of about 94,000, and that is number 7, but yet it's ranked only 34th in the world for happiness. And my hypothesis is that it's just too damn hot and humid out there in Singapore, because I used to live in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia for 4 years. But gotta say, food in Singapore is top 3 in the world. So I wanted to figure out, what are the things we should spend more of our time on to make us more happy? And I want to do some reflection because I think this is really important. Ultimately, Financial Samurai is a site to help get your finances right. So you're no longer going in reverse. You've stabilized. You're going forward. And you can spend the majority of your time not worrying about money, really. Because the money is making money for you. And it's going to be there for you. But you can spend more of your time optimizing for the other things that hopefully will make your life more meaningful. So there are 5 things that I think are really important. The first one is independence. Independence grows over time. The first taste of independence usually comes when you're able to live on your own without parental assistance. Perhaps it's going away to school or landing your first job. Independence continues to grow once you start gaining respect and mastery at your job. The better you are at your job, generally the more leeway you're going to be given to do what you want. You might eventually get promoted to run a team or a department, giving you even more independence. You finally gain maximum independence when you no longer have to report to anybody. Most think retirement is the ultimate goal. But based on my experience, after being away from the workforce for 7 years, retirement isn't a cure-all for happiness. There's plenty of negatives you got to deal with as well, which again means money is not the main point for making people happy. Some people believe that entrepreneurship leads to maximum independence. Instead, entrepreneurship can lead to tremendous dependence if you hire workers and take in investors. What people really want is a profitable, bootstrapped, solo business or the financial independence to do whatever without caring about money. In my case, I was pretty happy to have a job right out of college, even though they worked me like a dog. But after about, 3 to 6 months, that happiness really began to fade because it was just too stressful and too arduous. So my happiness level is probably around a 6. It was only until I moved to San Francisco and got some more independence, covering West Coast counts and feeling like I was in a more entrepreneurial office environment, did my happiness take a tick up. But then the financial crisis hit, and then I was feeling a little bit miserable again. And so it was only after I negotiated a severance in 2012 did my happiness level creep up to about an 8 out of 10 and has remained at roughly this level with temporary spikes to 10 and then obviously temporary spikes to like 5 or 6. So for those of you who want happiness, try your best to figure out an occupation or something that'll give you as much independence as possible. Independence has been, I think, the most important factor in consistently keeping me happier at a higher level. So 2, family. No matter how much of a knucklehead you are, most family members will provide unconditional love and forgiveness. They will support you no matter what. It is estimated that average friendship lasts only 7 years because life gets in the way. Maybe a job, relocate someone, maybe you lose interest or you have a family, whatever it is. While friends come and go, family members last for much, much longer. We must make an effort to regularly keep in touch with our parents and siblings. In my situation, I messed up a lot in high school and in grade school. Got in, suspensions because of fights, did some other bad things. And I think in retrospect, I think I gave my parents a lot of headache and anxiety. So sorry, guys. I'm going to try to do it better. Well, it's actually too late. So I'm going to try to teach my kids to do a little bit better. But they've always been supportive. Whether, when I got suspended from school or when I decided to change jobs, they're like, no, the money's probably not going to be worth their misery going to New York City. And when I decided to leave work for good in 2012 at 34, they never had any pushback. They were just like, well, that's interesting. Let's talk about the pros and cons and what you want to do. Just really supportive. And even when I decided to get married, they were also so welcoming to my wife. So I really, really appreciate my parental support. And I would say I'd give them 8 out of 10. They've always been there. They haven't been like super lovey-dovey like you see in the movies and stuff, but they've always picked up my calls and been supportive. 3, your own family. I think this is pretty important for happiness as well. If you're lucky enough to find a life partner, there's nobody you will love more in this world. If you want to have children, and if you do have children, the amount of joy you will experience is beyond anything you can ever imagine. I understand that not everybody wants children. In fact, about 10-11% of you in my survey of over 1,000 said you do not want children, and that's absolutely fine. Having a family made up of just you and your soulmate is incredibly powerful. So much freedom, so much joy. Make it your mission to find someone who loves you as much as you love them. In my situation, I got really, really lucky. I met my wife when I was a senior in college and she was a freshman. Because I met my wife so early, I've always had this minimum elevated level of contentment. I knew that worst case, if I could only make minimum wage working at McDonald's, at least I'd have her in my life and we'd make things work. And she felt the same way. It didn't really matter how much money we had, you know, or what we did. It was just like, well, we have each other, so we'll figure it out. And when you have some partner that will always support you and allow you to figure things out as you go along, it's incredibly, incredibly powerful. And when we finally had our boy in 2017, my happiness temporarily rocketed to a 10 plus, I don't know, maybe a 15. It was like unlocking a feeling I had never known before. And nobody really kind of tells you that for some reason. But I'm telling you guys who want kids or are thinking about kids, there's this unlocked feeling that you have when you have your own. But as many first-time stay-at-home parents know, taking care of a kid is tremendously difficult, some more than others, right? I have a boy. He's very strong-willed. He knows what he wants, likes what he wants. Maybe he's kind of like me, pretty bullheaded. And his temper tantrums are out of control at 26 months old. And so that kind of doesn't make me happy. That kind of makes me miserable sometimes, but I wouldn't trade it for the world. 4, the ability to stand up for yourself. I don't hear about this much, but I think this is very, very important. One of the worst feelings is getting bullied and not being able to do anything about it. In school, you might get picked on by a bigger kid. You want to fight back, but you're afraid of getting your face punched in. So you rationalize, okay, better to give him my lunch money and starve than face his wrath. At work, you might get tormented by a senior colleague. You want to tell her, stop, look, just leave me alone. Why are you always making fun of me in public? Why are you making me look bad? Why are you throwing me under the bus? But you're afraid of standing up for yourself because you might be afraid you might get a bad review from her. You need the money because, I don't know, you're raising a family, you bought a house, you bought a car, whatever it is. Online, you're afraid to say what you truly think out of fear of getting ridiculed. As a result, you keep quiet. And you might even join a mob that bullies others for thinking differently. The fear of standing up for yourself and others is one of the reasons why bad things stay bad for a very, very long time. It's amazing how people aren't willing to step up and stand up for what they believe in or defend someone who's, you know, being bullied or whatever because they're afraid of getting bullied or mobbed themselves. It's kind of sad. So my situation, ever since elementary school, for some reason, it must be DNA, I've had the courage to fight back and stand up for myself. I hated bullies and I never let them push me around or call me names. And if they did, they would feel my fist of fury. And this was me as an elementary school kid. And what I learned since I was a kid while standing up for yourself is that even if you take a few blows, the bullies eventually stop. Some start respecting you. Some may even apologize. The repercussions were plenty, frankly. Suspensions, multiple trips to the principal's office, and a few bruises, but it always felt great to defend my honor. So I've been going through this since at least 5 years old. I can remember so many altercations from 5 years old through college, frankly. I've carried this attitude of standing up for myself my entire adult life. When there was BS happening at work, I spoke up, often to my own detriment. I didn't appreciate nepotism, and nepotism is very, very strong in the corporate workplace. The higher you go, the higher you ascend in the ranks, the more it's about who you know and not what you do. And I often challenged senior employees whom I did not respect. And this was a terrible, terrible career strategy. Don't do what I do if you want to ascend the corporate ranks and get like that network of support. Because when my big bosses who were in my corner were eventually pushed out, I was left with few backers. And this caused me not to be able to ascend to managing director, among other things, right? Financial crisis and having to relocate to a headquarter office, yada, yada, yada. But for me, I knew my career was over at this firm. I had made too many enemies or just ruffled too many feathers. It's because I just called out so much BS. It was just whatever. And then online, Financial Samurai has grown large enough to attract, unfortunately, some hateful comments every week from people like the old Biff. We're talking racist comments, just really offensive comments, and you know, tons and tons of spam. It's just kind of crazy. You guys have no idea. And even if only 0.1% of the people hate your guts, however, that's 1,000 people a month if you receive 1 million visitors a month. And that's what Financial Samurai receives, about 1 million visitors a month. And actually, it's not 0.1%. It's probably more like 0.001%. But still, even if you have like 10 haters every single month leaving you nasty stuff, it's kind of annoying and kind of perturbing. I generally delete 99%. But if someone is stupid enough to try to come at me, someone who doesn't rely on money to live, who doesn't have a job to live, and if you're stupid enough to still come after someone in this situation, and you yourself need a job, well, there's probably something bad's going to happen to you because I'm going to stand up for myself. Too many people kind of ruin their careers, frankly, because they do something stupid online, social media or whatever. So just really think twice or thrice if you need money to survive before you write anything nasty or you come to someone's house and hate on them. It's just not worth it. So this is really one of the biggest benefits of being unemployed, is not being able to get fired. So standing up for yourself can feel initially scary, but the more you practice, I promise you, the easier it will get. And then finally, the final thing that I think will make people happy or happier is doing work that is helpful to others. One of the reasons why 70% of people are disengaged at work is because they know what they do is probably not very helpful to society. Think about the workers who work at PepsiCo. Their entire goal is to sell sugary drinks and process foods that get people addicted and fat and sick. That can't feel very good. And then imagine working at Juul. Their goal is to get adults and teenagers hooked on vaporized nicotine. I mean, how do you feel good about that? How do you feel good about getting people addicted and hooked to something that's poisonous? It's just beyond me. It doesn't feel good. And I think deep down, every single employee knows this. And that's why, again, 70% of people are disengaged. But if you create or do something that's helpful to others, you will feel extremely, extremely wealthy. Talk to veteran nurses, teachers, firefighters, and social workers. Really listen to them. You will hear many of them glow about their rewarding careers. Sure, they'll have issues just like everybody else, pay, office politics, and so forth. But it's really a big difference. In my situation, before 9/11 happened, it felt great working in finance in New York City. After 9/11, I felt a tremendous amount of sadness, deep sadness. Suddenly, nothing I did at work mattered anymore compared to what the brave first responders did to try and rescue the people trapped in World Trade Centers. I wanted to join the U.S. Foreign Service to actually serve my country and do something more productive, like my parents. But I was neither smart enough or motivated enough to pass those exams. It took at least 3 years to get over my disillusionment of working in finance. During this time, I went to business school part-time, partly to see if I could gain some knowledge to do something else. Just kind of explore. That's what you do when you go to business school. But part of the deal of having my tuition paid for was to continue working at my firm for at least 2 years after graduation. And during this time, unfortunately, the financial crisis had hit in 2008, and there was nowhere I could go. The best I could do was hold on tight for my employment life, as I had just taken out a $1.1 million mortgage in 2006 when I was 28 years old. I mean, that was everything I had after the down payment, and that's scary stuff. So it wasn't until about 2011 that I decided that my biggest joy was writing and helping people get their finances straight. I started Financial Samurai in 2009 during the depths of the financial crisis. And that was a period where I had to really reassess what I wanted to do with my life. And by 2012, 2011, all I could think about was Financial Samurai. So that's what I did. I finally said goodbye to my employer then. And the thing that has kept me going for so long, I mean, 10 years, it's just kind of crazy. 3 to 4 times a week of writing something, commenting, producing things. It's just tiring thinking about it. But what has kept me going for so long has been the consistent positive feedback that I get from readers that outnumber the negative feedback, probably 200 to 1. Over the past 10 years, I've witnessed readers eradicate their debt, fix their spending habits, buy their first homes, leave toxic work environments, negotiate amazing severances, create thriving side hustles, build substantial retirement portfolios, start families, and so much more. It's been really a wonderful journey and an honor and a treat to hear from each and every one of you. So thank you. Before you reach financial independence, you might get tricked into believing that money is the main reason why people are happy. It's easy to lose sight of all the things on your quest for greater wealth. However, you can be the richest person in the world, but if you have nobody to share your fortune with, I doubt you'll be happier than someone making $40,000 a year in a job in which he or she loves and who has a loving partner and supportive friends in real life. For the sake of happiness, I think it's worth staying fit, finding people in real life who love you as much as we love them, and doing something that's helpful to others. And who knows, you might even reach a point where you're so happy that money starts pouring in as a byproduct. So I'd love to hear from all of you on what you think the proper percentages are for money, family, purpose. I really think we need to focus more, much more, on everything else besides money. Let's get our money right. Let's keep it from going in reverse. Let's keep it safe. Let's keep the money productive so that it can free up tremendous amount of time to spend on things that truly matter. Thanks so much, everyone.